A-R-N-E.
A-R-N-E. Q-U-A-R-N-E.
Is that ready over there? I'm going to go ahead and call to order this regular meeting of the Portland Planning Commission for Thursday, November 17th. If you're able, stand with us, and I've asked Commissioner Romano to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner Romano.
Therefore, we can have the roll call.
Commissioner Vickers?
Here.
Commissioner Romano?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Norby?
Here.
Chairperson Elliott?
Here. It's going to bring us to item number four, oral and written communications. This is a time really reserved for anyone to come up to speak to an item not on the agenda. So if you are on the agenda tonight, you'll have an opportunity to speak at that time. Seeing no one coming to the podium, we're going to move to consent calendar. The very three items that you see on there, those include minutes from both the August and October meetings, as well as our compliance statement for AB 361. If there are no questions, we would entertain a motion to accept the consent.
I make a motion we accept the August and October meetings as printed.
Second. Okay, we have a motion to approve two sets of minutes, and it's been seconded. Is there any further discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We did also want to make note formally in the consent if we could get a motion for acceptance of the compliance statement here on AB 361. It's a continuing resolution allowing us to implement teleconferencing requirements.
I move we can approve consent item A, compliance with AB 361.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed. With the consent of the commission, I'd like to move the discussion item that's indicated in your agenda number 7, head of the public hearing items. Any reason you couldn't do that tonight? Then we're going to go ahead and do that. And with that, I'm going to ask for a staff report for the conditional use permit CUP 2022-06. From Hidden Treasure Sanctuary Rescue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, members of the commission. This item is a continued public hearing from our last meeting, and you have an amended staff report in your package today. The request of the Planning Commission at the end of our deliberations last time was to go and amend the conditions of approval and work with the applicant to make sure that we were all in agreement with the amended conditions. We've gone back, we've listened to the tape, we've listened to the dialogue, we've kicked these around, and I just now realized there's no stamp page on here, so I apologize, but in your packet, there are amended conditions of approval, and I would point out primarily they're 18, 19, 20, and 21,
yep.
And they address occupancy, which we talked about at our last meeting. They address overnighting of animals, and ultimately address the concerns of staff, which is that a conditional use permit is issued by running with the land, and we wanted to make sure it was limited in its scope to smaller animals. So we think we've addressed what you've directed us to go do. The applicant is here. Ms. Johnson has been brought along, and she's been great to work with along this process. She is in agreement with the terms of the amended conditions, and I simply have one outside the box, but I want to get it on the record. There has been information sent to our department about the possibility of someone living on the site. And we've informed Mrs. Johnson that that's not allowed within that zoning district. And she has acknowledged that, no, that's not the plan. So anyway, I think we're good. And I hope that follows your direction. And I think that's what we have for you this evening.
Thank you very much, Scott. And Ms. Johnson, thank you for being with us tonight. I do want to say that we appreciate your patience in allowing those items to be addressed, and we're happy tonight to be able to have this to consider.
I just want to also say that I just thoroughly enjoyed the process, and I'm very grateful for all of you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
You don't have to stay for the vote, but you may want to. You never know what would happen if you just left.
Okay.
There could be some. There could be some cat haters up here. That just don't want to let you know, but I doubt. So, commissioners, you've been provided with an amended staff report. You're able to see those items 18, 19, 20, and 21. They're double underscored there to draw attention to them. Those were the things that I recall that we had discussed, just for clarification. So if there are no further questions, then we would entertain a motion. And there are some sample motions, I believe, correct?
There are on
the unnumbered page.
It's actually number 4 of the original staff report.
Okay, number 4 of the original staff report. We will find eventually.
Yes.
Yeah, I see it there. The first section. So there's both a CEQA action that's necessary as well as the conditional use permit. They can be run together or they can be 2 separate actions.
I move to approve Planning Commission Resolution PC2022, next number, approving conditional use permit application 2022-06. Subject to the conditions and approval provided as attachment B and findings shown on attachment E, further expanded to include the amended conditions of approval as attachment A. Pursuant with CEQA CP2022-06, determines proposed action as exempt from further review pursuant to section 15061.B.3 of the government code.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
A motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you, Mrs. Johnson. Thank you. We wish you all the best.
This is very
sweet. You're welcome.
With that, we do have some public hearing items. They are listed in your original bulletin. Here's item number 6. And so at this point, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to staff for the report on the first public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. We're waiting on the PowerPoint to come up here. There we go. And you can even advance it to the next slide here. And there we go. So we'll start here. So the McDonald's Corporation has requested approval of a freeway monument sign. City of Orland Municipal Code requires that freeway monument signs be approved if they're taller than 70 feet and bigger than 100 square feet via use permit by the Planning Commission. So we're here tonight seeking a use permit for a sign that is that's 100, the pole is 100 foot tall, and I'll go into that in a second, with a total sign height of 110 feet. And the square footage of the advertising space would be 250 or 10 by 25. So over height and over size of the code, thus requiring the conditional use permit. The parcel, obviously, in fact, you want to kick it forward one slide for me, is, I think everybody knows where this is at. It would be Burger King is to the, what would be the right, and Starbucks is at the end of the cul-de-sac. So this is that piece immediately to the west of the Burger King. The site plan for the quick serve restaurant has previously been approved. So tonight we're not here to talk about whether or not we like Big Macs or not. We're here to talk about the sign.
Yep.
In this particular visual, the red is the parcel. The yellow is approximately where the sign would go. I say approximately, obviously we're close, but I'm not going to say that that's exactly. So next slide, please. That's the parcel. The parcel is designated commercial on our general plan. It's designated CH or highway service commercial on their zoning map. The frontage of that lot is off of Francis Lane, and the water and the sewer utilities come off of Francis Lane as well. The sign would be located entirely on the McDonald's parcel and out of the right of way.
Mm-hmm.
Next, yep, there we go. So this is the proposal. Again, 100-foot sign with a 10-foot, 100-foot pole with a 10-foot sign component, so an overall height of 110 feet, and then the 10 by 25 square footage at the top. I will note that staff doesn't believe that future tenant is McDonald's. So this isn't a sign that can be used by someone off-site. I would tell you that the owner of the parcel, or at least the previous owner of the parcel, owned two parcels and wanted to only use one sign. However, the city of Orland does not allow for off-site signage. So if the pole is not on that site, it couldn't be used by the adjacent parcel. So this would really be all for the McDonald's. So we asked, as we have done in the past, for, dare I say, photo exhibits, trying to express to you the need for the extra height and the extra size. Mm-hmm. So in this particular exhibit, what's being shown is the top left is kind of the viewpoint about 1,500 feet northbound, if you're heading southbound, so it'd be north of town on I-5, and the arrow is pointing to where the new sign would be located as you're making that trip. Next slide. This is looking, if you're traveling south to north, and this is about 1,000 feet south of where the sign would be located. It's really hard to see, and I don't think I have a laser pointer here. No, I don't. There, you can kind of see the white striping that's the triangle on I-5. That's the off-ramp, so that you can kind of see where that picture was taken. Again, that's about 1,000 feet. And the McDonald's sign, you can kind of see where the black arrow is pointing. That's at 110, that's as proposed right now. So from the standpoint of your visual, Burger King bit in front of it. And then if you look across the freeway, just a little bit back there, that's the pilot sign. And we all know how big that one is. So it gives you some perspective on where this is at. Next slide. So the recommendation tonight, we went through in the staff report, hopefully laid out what the parameters were in the Orland Municipal Code. The action this evening is the approval of a conditional use permit for additional sign height and sign area for a pole sign. We have some sample motions for you here on the screen and in your staff report. And without going into too much detail, I would only note one maybe correction in the staff report. In the opening paragraph, it mentions that the sign would be located within 330 feet of another existing pole sign. Actually, it's not. When we first were engaging with McDonald's, the sign was going to be northerly on the parcel, actually what would be the northeast corner, like up adjacent to the drive-through to Burger King. They've actually since moved it to the front of the building, which is clear the 330 feet standard. And why is that important? Because our code says we should try to be spacing these out a minimum of 330 feet from any other sign. It does meet that provision in its current location. So
we would just make sure that the minutes reflect that it's located beyond
330. That's exactly right. Yep.
Rather than within.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
So that's staff report. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to attempt them.
So this is a public hearing, correct?
It is.
Let's open the public hearing first, unless there's questions specific to the report. And then, of course, commissioners will be able to.
Anybody online?
Yes.
Anybody have any questions specific to the report?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so
I do think we have representatives of the application.
Yes.
We're trying to figure out how to logistically do this. So
you're waiting to see if they're online with us.
He's unmuted. So
okay.
Drew Sanchez.
Okay. So Mr. Sanchez, you're up if you'd like to say anything.
Good evening, everyone. I do want to clarify what's in the report and what was mentioned earlier, that this sign that we are proposing is a dual tenant sign. If you pull up the slide where it shows the rendering of the 100-foot pole with the 10-foot sign, it's McDonald's arches on one side and a tenant on the other. Now, I know that your guys' code does not allow for offsite advertisement. However, this is why we submitted into the Planning Commission with a letter that's attached. I don't know if it's attached or you guys can see it, that details that the property owner owns both parcels and that the adjacent parcel would be the sole use for the designated other side of the sign. So I just want to make that clear. Does everyone understand that's what we are proposing?
I like it a lot.
So I will simply say that that's great that they're proposing that. I appreciate that, but the code doesn't allow that. So
can I ask
Sure, you can ask why. I can't give you an answer. That's just what the code said. So whether or not the applicant would like that to happen or not, in my estimation, and in talking with our attorney, is not relevant. Tonight, we're here to approve a sign on a piece of property. If, in fact, the applicant wants it to be an offsite sign, the city would either need to amend its code, actually change our zoning code, or issue a variance. The attorney is recommending that we change our code and not issue a variance. So I appreciate Mr. Sanchez's comment, but with all due respect, the code is what the code is, and we can't amend that through a conditional use permit tonight.
So I respect that. Codes are set in place for a reason. However, this tenant, the future tenant that the property owner would lease to, would want a sign, and in the spirit of not having too many signs, this was the reason for it with the dual tenant signage, so that we can limit the amount of pole signs on adjacent properties.
And that's up to the Planning Commission. If you would like us to pursue, you know, approve the sign this evening, or just take no action, whatever you want to do, and direct us to go do a code amendment process. A code amendment process typically takes somewhere between 60 and 90 days. My hunch is it would be back to you in February. The goal of Orland is always to try to expedite people through our process as quickly as we can. So we were informed that the approval of the sign is the entire decision-making process by the McDonald's Corporation. So we wanted to get here as quickly as we could tonight. If we want to go back and do a code amendment, I'm happy to take your direction. But tonight, I need to inform both Mr. Sanchez and the commission, you can't do that through a conditional use permit. So I appreciate his comments, but I just want the commission to know that.
Is a variance acceptable through the conditional use permit and not a code amendment?
No.
So Mr. Sanchez, this is Wade Elliott. I'm the chairman of the commission. What I'm hearing is that, and this might just be one of those things that got missed before we came tonight, maybe wasn't fully understood by either the applicant or by the city. It sounds like there's a path through here, even the recommendation of the attorney that's already been made, that there may be reasons and in the best interest of the city for not only your application, but future applications for development, that particular code doesn't really address what's best for either. So it sounds to me like there may be a way through this. It won't be through tonight's action. The one thing that we would be approving tonight or could approve tonight is the size of your sign, the height of your sign with conditions. And it sounds to me like one possibility is there's a follow-up action taken by you as an applicant to make a request either specifically for a variance or for a code change, either of which could result in exactly what you want. And it seems reasonable that that's a possibility we go that way.
At the minimum, I would like tonight to serve the purpose to approve the sign at the height with the square footage for this purpose, I guess, a sole tenant. And then if I understand correctly, if we do want to get it amended to be a dual tenant sign, then we can go to the path of getting it approved that way, but at least we get an approval for the height and the square footage of the sign. Is that correct?
Yes, I think, yes. We don't want to create any additional delays, but yes, that's within our purview tonight. That's what the CUP that is being considered tonight would permit.
Okay, great. Now, if you would allow me, I do have a little kind of narrative for you guys, or I think you guys understand the importance of this sign, but if you would allow me, I would like to give my little spiel here, or we can continue. It's up to you.
Please go ahead.
All right. So thank you for taking the time tonight to discuss our application for the CUP of the pole sign to be placed on the approved building location of the future McDonald's. The pole sign being discussed tonight is extremely important to the future success of this McDonald's location. As a restaurant adjacent to a busy interstate, our business is dependent on travelers heading north and south to their final destinations. McDonald's restaurants and our tall road signs have always been a halfway milestone marker or a pit stop location for many families traveling on vacation or long distances along the 5. The pole sign submittal that awaits your approval serves as a great way to let travelers know that hot fries and a cold beverage is just right off the highway. We are proposing a 100-foot tall sign mainly to be seen from a further distance so that travelers have the opportunity to safely merge off the interstate and onto the Highway 32 Orland-Chico off-ramps. At the top of this pole sits a 250-square-foot sign with the MCD arches and space for a future tenant. Ignore that, but both parcels are owned by one property owner, and the letter included in this package details our reasoning for the dual-tenant signage. We'll ignore that again. At the bottom of the pole will be a decorative base that matches the theme of the restaurant using the same approved materials. This pole sign will also help drive customers to the restaurant, whether they want to quickly order in the drive-thru to get back on the road or come and sit down and enjoy our brand new restaurant with a newly introduced furniture theme as part of our global portfolio for seating and decor. Other than its customers, this sign is the most important aspect of the restaurant, and its success is highly dependent on the CUP approval. I'd be happy to address any questions you may have. That's it.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. I think what we'll do is stick with us. We're going to open up the public hearing as we're required to do. And when I close the public hearing, commissioners are going to weigh in and they may have some questions for you, Mr. Sanchez.
Thank you.
All right. So at this time, I've got 10 minutes of the hour. I'm going to open the public hearing. Did you want fries with that? Okay, so we're going to close the public hearing. There are no individuals here to speak to it. So at this point, I'm going to turn to the commission and see if you have any questions, be it for staff or for the applicant.
I would only note to the planning commission, we have not received any written or verbal comments about this.
Thank you, Scott.
I think it's a great idea. And I what happened to our discussion over we were going to change the sign rules, which is, I think, long overdue.
But we made a lot of improvements to signs.
Yes.
We streamlined a lot of things, but one thing we missed that's drawn out tonight is this reason that it may actually be in the best interest of the city, in my opinion, to limit the number of these lollipops. And one way you limit the number of the lollipops is you share signage. And so it may very well be that what Mr. Sanchez has actually done for us tonight is help us fix yet again something in our code that we missed related to signage.
But I would tell you, by the scars on my body, we did in fact make substantial changes to our code.
And it looks good. But that's a big one, because Speedway needs to have another sign below it. I see,
Isn't the Taco Bell and Speedway sign a combination?
No. It is, yeah.
No,
it is not. Taco Bell.
You're right.
Speedway's there.
Yeah, the gas one stands alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's big enough for additional.
It
just doesn't have any yet. Right. And they may be one of the beneficiaries of such an action.
Right.
If we were to take it later.
Yes, and just way off topic here, since we're here to address the McDonald's sign, but in fact, that came up in our deliberation in the Planning Commission last time, and I'm going to look to the two folks who were with us. Using them as an example, and the Speedway sign and the McDonald's, or I'm sorry, the Taco Bell sign were approved in the county before they became part of the city.
Yeah. So any other questions or comments?
I have just a couple, I think, for Scott. First of all, I would support doubling up signs. I think as this freeway corridor gets developed, I think it would be good to have some things in place as far as even if we just increase the height limit for that corridor, you know, that it's just allowing. How tall is the Burger King?
120. I believe it's 120. Yeah.
And on the Burger King site.
Well, again, that was approved before we had rules, and in fact, we increased the height by over double last time around. So if you wanted to go more, I mean, I guess this is the debate we'll have.
It's 70 right now?
It's 70.
And we're looking at, we're as high as 120. This proposal is 110. We approved one at the last meeting for 100. We have another one that we approved previously for 100. So you could kind of see a pattern here where 70 is not adequate for some of these applicants because of exactly the things Mr. Sanchez referred to. They've got to see it with enough time to react and exit safely. And it's critical for businesses that are dependent on that traffic. So,
which I agree.
What I'm hearing is, while it wouldn't be for tonight, there may be reasons to broaden a little bit discussion about amending codes in this regard as it relates to sign placement, sign height could also be.
Yeah, and I want to be very clear. It's plausible to include multi-tenant signs via a use permit. However, our code doesn't allow it. So I don't want the impression to be we can't do that, because that's a very viable possibility. Mm-hmm. However, in the current instance today, the way our code reads is that's not an option for us.
Right, and the issue is if everything required a use permit, then why have code? You really don't want, and that's what, to be fair, that is what we cleaned up mostly of the sign changes that were made over 2 years ago, is so many things were requiring variances or a use permit to even be considered, and now the vast majority of signage is pretty straightforward and ministerial. So, all right, other questions? Any other questions? Mr. Sanchez, thank you for being with us tonight. I think what you've brought up tonight seems very reasonable to me, and I think probably to other commissioners, if not all of the commissioners. It sounds like what we are prepared to consider tonight is a request as submitted, minus the approval for a secondary tenant, but knowing that in our discussion it would be reflected that we would anticipate the applicant would then meet with our planning department and then choose a course of action, either a request to work with the city for a potential change in our code that would make this permissible, not just for you, but for future tenants, which I would tend to lean towards. Or in your case, if necessary, a variance, if that expedites things either way. So any comments you have, Mr. Sanchez, while you're here, before we come and call the question here? Did we lose him?
No, he can speak.
Oh, thank you. No, I don't have any further questions, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you for being with us. So commissioners, the question is to you now. We have some sample language for this particular item.
It's on the screen.
Yeah. Well, you're making it easy on us. And again, I think there should probably be a reference that it's for a single on-site business, subject to maybe some future action that could amend that. But at this point, we're not able to approve an adjacent parcels advertising. All right. Yeah. You can combine those or they can be two separate motions.
I move to approve the project CP 2022-07 and determine the proposed action is exempt for further review pursuant to section 15061.B.3 of the government code. Also move to approve the planning commission resolution PC 2022.
Next in line,
approving conditional use permit application 2022-07, subject to the conditions of approval provided as attachment C and findings shown on attachment D.
Thank you, Commissioner Romano. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Ladies first, I guess. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
And is it, I will just ask a staff clarification question. Am I assuming correctly that you are giving us direction to move forward with the code amendment to bring back to you at a future date about this?
Yes.
Okay.
Pursuant to a conversation with the applicant.
That's fair.
Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. I will tell you right now, the variance option is probably the least preferred option that we hopefully will come back.
I would
hopefully
agree.
with a text amendment.
Yeah. I think we can fix an issue for a future applicant, not just this one. So
yeah. Thank
you. Mr. Sanchez, thank you for joining with us. And on behalf of the City of Orland, thank you for choosing our community as a future home for the Golden Arches. We know that this is an iconic business. Multiple decades in America, it really is a very special kind of business to us, and we appreciate that you chose to do business right here in Orland.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we intend to start construction right away, so get ready.
Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's going to bring us to item number 8. This is another conditional use permit requiring a public hearing. Sure. The applicant is here as well, and I'm going to ask for a staff report to begin us on this item number 6B on your agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is the next in line of the action items. This is a public hearing tonight. This is a request for a conditional use permit by Mr. Schnoblin, who is here with us, establish a metal working shop on an existing site. And I'm going to kind of go off script here, and I'm going to ask Jen to, as she's multitasking, to hop me up onto the PowerPoint. We've got some, keep going. So that can kind of work. We'll make that work. So I think what we probably know this locally as the old Arbuckle's surplus shop. Mr. Schnoblin has come and asked me about moving into that facility to operate what are called CNC metalworking machines. And those are computer controlled CAD-based metal working machines. The dilemma we have in our code is relatively, things like CNC machines weren't necessarily always known when our code was created. So we try to fit today's technology into the categories that we have in our text. So we're asking for a use permit for a metalworking shop because that is the closest facility name type for a facility that would be used for inside manufacturing of metal parts. So I know Mr. Schnoblin is here and can give you a much more eloquent description of what it is he does and how it works. But what I will say, and I'll go to the next slide here, at least, come on, maybe. There we go. So there is the site plan, and this is also in your staff report. The current, dare I say, complex is really three kind of separate buildings, and this is their proposal for how they would like to use this. I would note that it's an existing facility. It's obviously been in the community a long time. Existing water, existing sewer. There is no access off the alley, which is located to the west or closer to the railroad tracks. There also is no access off of Tehama, which is the street that would be to the north. Access off the site is through two existing driveways off of Fifth Street. One of the conditions and one of the requests I'm going to add this evening is in speaking with our city engineer and our public works director, the sidewalk is really broken up and the gutter pan is really broken up over the years of use that it was other things, that the project would be required to bring those up to current city standard. And that's something we do with all development. That shouldn't be a big deal. And I'll ask you to go to the next one, blow to the next one. So that's just, you know, the overhead site as it looks on Google Earth. You can go to the next one. There is the example of the sidewalk, and I think with a little, like a hoe or a shovel, you could probably get those weeds off the gutter pan pretty quickly. But part of the reason they're growing there is because it's broken and dirt has accumulated. And so we all, I think, know how that happens. So we'll be bringing that up to speed. Go to the next one. You can even go to the next one. There we go. So that is kind of the central courtyard, if you will. And up until pretty recently, there was, you know, rockets and all kinds of cool stuff in there. the idea would be that deliveries for the site would be utilizing that courtyard. One of the requirements that we have in Orland now in our code is that where you have public access and deliveries, you actually have it paved. So paving of the courtyard would be one additional condition that I would ask of you tonight. Again, after talking to our public works and our director and our city engineer, those are the two added ones that we would talk about this evening. Ultimately, there is parking on the street. I mean, we have a beautiful new Tehama Street, and it's got some parallel parking. There is angled parking on Fifth Street all up and down. This is within our downtown special parking overlay designation. So therefore, there is not a requirement for direct on-site parking. They can actually utilize the spaces on the street.
You said there was no access from Tehama, but there is. There's a door there.
Oh, for vehicle. Vehicles. I'm sorry. Oh, vehicle. I should have clarified.
All right.
The facade does have a human door. or I guess non-humans could go in there too, but a door. But vehicles are directed off of Fifth Street, so my apologies for that. This is designated on our general plan for this use. So there is just to the south, kind of where this, the back of this picture is the olive production plant, and there's lots of cylindrical barrels with olives in them. Across the street to the, that would be to the east, there are also barrels. To the west is an industrial warehouse. That would be the warehouse adjacent to the railroad tracks. Again, part of the olive facility, I believe. So with that, the action this evening is a public hearing for a conditional use permit to approve a metalworking shop. And I would conclude by saying, A, that there are sample motions on the screen and in your report. And I would remind you that, as we've done in the past, that conditional use permits run with the land. Mm-hmm. So the approval of the metalworking shop would be in perpetuity and is a entitlement, so to speak, that runs on title with the property. With that, I would answer any questions, and I would note both the current owner and the potential future user are in the audience with us.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good to have you with us. We will do a public hearing, looking around the room, unless you're going to talk during the public hearing. There may not be anybody to speak to it, but I would welcome you to the meeting tonight, and also if you want to come up and share with us now kind of the vision for this project, including, did you ask he would give us a more elegant description?
I figure he could probably do a much more eloquent job than I could.
He's going to be doing there.
Yes, exactly.
You can come on up if you would, okay. If you don't mind. Just easier to...
Up here?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're Mr. Shinola, right?
Correct.
Good to have you with us. And welcome to the other California.
Thank you.
I'm a former Bay Area guy myself.
Okay.
A long time ago, I kind of snuck it under the radar. They think I'm local somehow. This better.
Well, I used to live down there too, so
I didn't know that.
So my vision for this spot is to do as we call it, high variance, low volume machining, or high mix. So a lot of different parts. A lot of the same parts go to China. Or overseas, now to Vietnam, Mexico, because the labor is cheaper. But a lot of the biomedical parts will be high mix, and we'll buy some machinery. We already have some machinery, but we'll buy some new machinery, put it in there to be able to handle that high mix CNC parts. And a lot of what we're doing is trying to keep the NRE, which is the non-reoccurring engineering, low. So basically have the machines tooled up, have all the tools in the machines, have the fixtures all set up. So a part comes in, we could run it that week and get parts to our end customers. What makes it really nice here is Chico State has a really nice, really good mechatronics program. Mm-hmm. So we plan on partnering with them, try to automate things. Another thing that's really good is the UPS delivers to the Bay Area and Sacramento, and I believe Reno as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our customers are in that area in one day, so UPS ground. So that's what makes it really nice up there. And also the price of the buildings.
Absolutely.
I think I'm renting 800 square feet down there, and I'll be paying the same on my mortgage as one.
So you're doing this in what city currently?
In San Francisco. We're at Hunter's Point in San Francisco. Yep. But it's every year in San Francisco, I pay more and I get smaller. Mm-hmm. I've moved 3 times in the last 5 years, and I can't do it anymore.
I got it.
And I can't grow. I just cannot grow. It's hard to. Mm-hmm. What we're doing right now is our growth is going to China. You know, that's what we have to do. And so that's the only way we do it. So this will keep a lot of those jobs over here.
To help us kind of, and the commissioners to understand.
Shut that off. That's China right now.
They just woke up. It's 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So, Could you, are you at liberty to tell us who, I mean, and we may still not know who you're talking about, who some of your customers might be?
Our customers are, we do Elon's rockets. We do the 3D printers for that.
Okay.
That's Velo 3D. Probably don't know who they are, but they make 3D printers basically, you know, the size of this room. Yeah, so they're doing rocket cones. The way they're doing MotoGP frames right now is they're 3D printing of them,
yeah,
and then they weld them together to get the stiffness at one frame the same way.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's one of our customers. We do a lot of creator burgers. We just did some grinders for them yesterday. They do automated robots to make hamburgers.
How many employees do you think you'd have?
Us?
Yeah.
Right now we have about 3, and then we grow from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wouldn't be like when you traditionally think of CNC or manufacturing, you think about a lot of employees, but we're going to be like high tech. Mm-hmm. So it would be high tech jobs.
Yeah.
If you need a lot of employees, basically, then the labor in China, they're not going to go to us.
Right.
That's
nice.
Mr. Nolan, how'd you find Orland?
How did I find Orland? It's a good question.
That's what they always ask me. Why did I move to Orland as soon as I got here? But I've been here 35 years.
You know, I've been coming to Willows forever. So going to Thunder Hill. And then, going to Stonyford. And I kind of like the area. I used to go up to Reading a lot. So I like the area. In my one of my employees is from Chico State. So that's how I know about Chico State.
Well, we'll send Mr. and Mrs. Bodden a thank you card.
Yeah.
for drawing some talent up here. What a good thing to be able to find a place where you can do business, where you can afford to do business, where you'd be encouraged to grow.
Yeah.
And have the opportunity to grow and be able to grow. So thank you.
Absolutely.
So much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions for him? Okay. Then I think what we'll do at this time, we're going to open up the public hearing. We need to do that.
Okay.
And then you can take your seat.
Okay.
And I won't make you come to the podium and get any questions. We'll let you go from there. So I'm going to open the public hearing as required at about 12 minutes after the hour. And then I'll wait and see if anybody wants to speak at the public hearing.
And I would note that we did not receive any written or verbal comments on this.
Good evening, Commission and City staff. I just came here to speak on behalf of...
If you don't mind, if you could give us your name. And...
Sure. My name is Austin Barrett. I'm a local realtor to Chico. I'm also a City Chico Architecture Review Board member, so luckily familiar with this format and these meetings. Just here tonight to speak on behalf of Bill and... certain case engineering going into the 500 Fifth Street building. You know, I know this is a use that we have to get a conditional use permit for. You know, there's a lot of history in this building that we've dug up over the years that we've been working on getting this thing sold. You know, when it was first built in 1915, it was Orland's first creamer. It was Orland butter and cheese. So it did cheese manufacturing for a lot of actually the North State. So I think that's pretty cool. They actually sold Orland's first company stock. They had $50,000 in equity, $5,000 a share, which was a lot of money. But a lot of cool history on this building. You know, I think this used to be, you know, easily compatible with the neighbors, being Mushko and facility across the street that manufactures the headstones. I don't think we're gonna have any issues with parking with neighbors, with problems with any part of this business. So
thank you for coming tonight. Anyone else wish to speak? We're in a public hearing for this item.
He just got here. Sorry.
Traffic. We don't have to, just so you know.
You don't mind to share your name and where you're from? You don't have to, but if you'd like to.
My name is Patrick Asfrida. I'm originally from New Jersey, but I moved out to California to go to school, and now I'm in manufacturing. I work with Bill here at Circuit Case Engineering, and we're excited to be bringing manufacturing to the world.
Well, thank you so much for...
All.
What was your first name?
Patrick.
And your last name?
Asfrida.
Okay.
You might have to spell that for Jennifer.
Okay. So A-S-T-A-R-I-T-A.
Cool.
This is like a sound.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Looking up at the clock, we're about 14 minutes after. I'm going to go ahead and close public hearing. And at this point, turn it over to the commission. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, now's the time.
What hours are you looking to? Is this going to be a 24-hour?
Yeah, the machines are going to be running 24 hours, so that's the plan. Not initially, but the plan is to have the machines. We're looking at machines that run, that you can set up for 70 hours of running, continuous running.
What kind of noise?
It's actually, so at the show, you know, we went to the IMPS show in Chicago, and they had all the machines running, and we were able to have a conversation in front of them. My particular, all the machines are enclosures, they have enclosures now, and mist, they have demisters, because you have coolant flowing and everything. So you can't really hear outside of the machines with the doors closed. The loudest thing is the compressor, and I think that was at like 85 decibels, something like that. There's quieter compressors, but you know, honestly, my building right now is cinder block, and you close the door and you can't hear from the outside.
It's not like there's a lot of any close residential neighbors there, but
yeah,
I just want to make sure that we're not going to be.
I looked at the sound code, and I think we wouldn't have a problem. Even the compressor, we wouldn't have a problem meeting that.
And I would tell you, we didn't tell them this, but we ran a sound model, and it's well within the parameters of our code.
Commissioners, other questions or concerns?
I think it's awesome.
Comments?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. I make the most out of
it. Do you have any neighbors in San Francisco you can bring up with you? I don't have any more buildings. We'll find the buildings.
You know, people ask me, like, why am I moving up here? And I go, go look at Los Banos. You know, like, Los Banos, like, 20 years or 10 years ago, you know, nobody was really, everybody's asking people whether they're moving out there, but that really grew quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah, well, the way I look at it is I can probably find a really good machinist out of the Bay Area because of the price of housing up here. They can't afford a house there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
So are you hiring?
In the future.
Okay.
I would remind the commission. The two additions that we'd like to make, that is making sure that it's an acknowledgement that we're...
Yeah, so if you look at the conditions of approval, it does not indicate
that right.
There has to be that the sidewalk and what's called a gutter pan have to be brought up to city standards in cooperation with our engineering, and that also you'll have to have a paved pathway for delivery. Yeah. So we'll let you figure out what's best there, how that works with our city engineer. But those would be the two conditions that would be, and Bill, those are amenable. You've discussed those, anticipated those, having to deal with that gutter pan repair, and then also paving for.
I haven't, but we'll go over that.
Okay, good. All right.
Yeah, so, I will tell you that came from our city engineer, public works director today. So
yeah,
Bill was not privy to that.
I'm sorry, so. This is the first year. Yeah. The reasons we could imagine why they don't want a dirt parking lot for traffic flow with large vehicles.
Right.
They're going to track mud out in wintertime into the roadway. Also, obviously, we don't go back to a current tenant or owner and say, hey, fix that sidewalk that's broken down since, what'd you say, 1915?
Well, that was, you know, the city put that gutter pan in and to their, the way they wanted to repair it back then, they had Gilbert was the public works director back then, and they just paved over the gutter pan. Is what it is.
Whoops!
Whoops! Yeah, tell the city to go get their asshole out of my gutter pan.
Well,
my comment would have been that they should have just done it while we were doing Tahama Street. They just
bring
it all the
way around the
brought it down.
Good news is we've got standards and engineering that will certainly get it right this time, and it'll last till. Well, somebody's here saying, you know, back when they put that machine shop back here in 23, we're very proud of that machine shop. You know, they build rockets and such.
That's all we do. We like the last guy.
So if there is a motion, the recommendation to satisfy the city that was not reflected in the original document, you would want to add those two items. So is there a motion to that effect?
I move to recommend the Planning Commission approve project CUP 2022-08 and determine that the proposed action is exempt from further review pursuant to section 15061.B.3 of the government code, and move to approve the Planning Commission resolution PC 2022-next number, approving the conditional use permit application 2022-08, subject to the conditions of approval provided as attachment C and findings shown on attachment D, as well as paving the delivery area and repairing the sidewalk and gutter pan.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second. We'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I'll let you pick. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Bill, thank you. If I call you Bill.
Yes.
So I came from Solano County. No regrets. Raised both my boys here. Built a new house here. I went to UC Davis, but I think he'll come home someday. He's at the Bay now. He'll figure it out. Works in Martinez, across the county, so he'll come back.
I was born in Orland and glad to have you.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
I do think what you will find is there is a spirit of entrepreneurialism here. I think the way people have survived here, like Mr. Arbuckle, is they found ways to make a living. The last
2 years.
Yeah. And I can tell you, I have to go work harder for fender washers and the bungee cords, but yes. I don't think you made a whole lot of money on it, but I always had the fender washer size I needed and the bungee cords I wanted. So that's a fact.
I kind of wish you were still there. Yeah.
You could get a length of rope, you could get chain, you could. And I don't know about the rockets. I never asked them to show me the secret rooms where the rockets were. There were a lot of practical things there. So. I wish you all the best. Thank you all for coming. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are now to the last, I believe, public hearing. This is zoning ordinance amendments to be discussed for accessory dwelling units and proportional development impact fee proposal. So I'm going to turn it over to Scott.
And there is a slide for this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. So the item before you is a bit of an odd one, to be honest with you. This is an amendment to the city code, but it's really an amendment to our fee program in the city code. So the city code directs that a fee program shall be established. This is amending that fee program. The long and the short of this item is that the California, back in 2018, when we first were directed by the state to deal with accessory dwelling units, the state passed regulations that said you shall not charge the same amount of money for an accessory dwelling unit that you charge for the primary dwelling. Ultimately, the word accessory actually means accessory. So you need to provide a quote proportionate or relation. Yeah. There has to be a direct relationship between what you charge the primary to the secondary, in this case called ADUs. The government code was then amended to eliminate all development impact fees for accessory dwelling units under 750 square feet. We've had 9 accessory dwelling units constructed in Orleans since that time, mm-hmm. all of which have been under 750. So we've never had anybody that's had to have a quote unquote proportionate development impact fee.
Is that a new construction or filling in the mold?
Either, really.
Garage conversions, I've never met anybody with a garage big enough to trigger this, but I guess it's plausible. Garage conversions actually are a little bit different even, so I don't want to go off the
junior
deep end on that one. But we don't have a provision in our current fee structure for a proportionate share code. So what this would do is it would establish what the law has directed us to have, which is a proportionate share take on it. So in your staff report, we note in the beginning that currently there are fees for single family residential units of about $18,000 and for multifamily of about $16,000. And that went through an extensive fee study that we did not too many years back. It's online if anybody wanted to look at that. it would be really nice if we could just say, oh, we're going to stick 50% or 40% and take a straight line percentage. The problem comes when your impact fee program isn't based upon square footage, it's based upon total units. So our math is not right. So we had to come up with a methodology on how we were going to achieve a proportionate relationship allocation cost. So what we're doing tonight is we're asking for a recommendation, because this will go to the city council, mm-hmm. a recommendation to amend the city code via the fee program to establish a relationship, a percentage share relationship. And if we're jumping to the, I guess, to the meat of the matter here,
the tables,
and I apologize for trying to make this as complicated as I made it. But what we're trying to do is reduce the proportionate share. So table two, proposed single family ADU diff fee, page four of your staff report. Currently, the cost for a single family residential unit is $18,000 approximate dollars. So the cost proportionate that we worked out would be, depending on your square footage, either 9,916, 11,569, or 13,221. Again, all quite substantially less than the 18. And that's for single family. And the multifamily table would be on page five, table three. And the action tonight isn't to set the fee, it's to establish the methodology via a recommendation to the city council. Yeah.
And they can adjust these numbers accordingly if they chose or not.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it is a public hearing. This is a recommendation item. This will go to the city council. And I could get into math if you wanted to, but that's the basics.
So we'll be able to discuss this. Why don't I open the public hearing so we can address that issue? I've got 26 minutes after the hour. I'm going to open the public hearing. I'm going to look out into the public and see an empty building. And then I'm going to close the public hearing. So commissioners, I had to go meet with Scott to kind of wrap my mind around this. What I basically understood is, so far, the folks that are actually taking advantage of what the law permits as a ministerial permit have yet to go beyond the 750 square feet and were prohibited at the 750 square feet of charging anything. So what we're really looking at is that situation where somebody has a large enough lot that they may build a more sizable second dwelling on their property, or convert an existing second dwelling into a residential use. Would that be accurate?
That's accurate.
So they've got a detached shop, we'll call it.
Right.
We've heard that people have barn dominions. People have barn dominions. And if they were to build or convert or build a barn dominium at this point as a second dwelling, ADU, and it was more than 750 square feet, it would, if this were approved by the city council, would trigger a reduced but still proportional fee that would go along with that application. So that's how I finally got it. Sounds like your typical garage conversion into living space, no impacts. The small granny flat under 750 square feet, no impact. It's just those larger, because the law now allows up to 1,200 square feet. So that's
can that actually fit in a sweaty lot that probably has a house on it?
Yeah.
That's a big one. I've never seen one that big, but mathematically, yes, it can. Yes,
okay. So there's a lot for sale in town, just about.
Yeah.
There are some lots in town that it would fit on.
10,000 square foot city lots. Sometimes they're corner lots. They just happen to be that big.
Yeah.
Just in the bigger picture, I know that's not related directly to this, but an ADU no longer requires off-street parking and access to it. You pretty much have to make it work. So if it means they go through a gate through the existing residence and they walk in around the backyard to get into their house, that's perfectly acceptable now under state law.
Yes.
And we'd have to ministerially approve that unless there's a life, fire, safety issue.
Yes.
That's about it. Life, fire, safety. The fire truck says, well, that's not wide enough, or that would create a problem for us to get a fire truck to that dwelling. Then they can, life, fire, safety does have sort of a veto on this, or can make additional conditions, but we could not. Is that an accurate way of saying this? Because I've been looking at this for a while, you know, I've asked lots of questions.
Yep.
And I think I've got my mind wrapped around it. And this actually was a lot simpler than all these pages would suggest.
Thank you. You made it You speak well.
I had to meet with Scott to make sure I wasn't missing something. But he said, no, you got it. You're not missing it.
Yeah.
So I mean, these numbers, obviously you came up with a formula. You had to come up with a formula.
Right. The law directs that we have a methodology. We have to come up with the numbers and the math. So
all right. And I see where the percentages, it looks like you pretty much just went with an average of homes that are actually built.
So
or could be built. Try to understand what you used. I mean, it's not.
I'm going to go way beyond where you want me to go here. Sorry, but when our fee study is based upon overall number of units, not square footage. Uh-huh. So we couldn't just take a straight line proportionate ratio. That doesn't work. So we had to assign an artificial number. To be honest with you, we had to make it up to make that proportion work right. So what we did is we went back and we looked through building permits to try to guesstimate UP occupants by the number of bedrooms. The census says we have 2.8 persons per household is what we have. Mm-hmm. That's what the census thinks we have. So we went back and we tried to extrapolate out. So it isn't a science vetted mathematic number. It is a number we created, but it's based upon actual data.
So it is, it seems more real that because you didn't say 50, 65 and 75, because you came up with, you know, fractions and percentages
It's based upon real information.
That's really impressive.
All right. So does the commission understand what we asked to do, whether we would recommend the adoption to the commission, to the council or consideration of adoption of what is going to be called accessory dwelling unit development impact fees meeting state standard?
I just have a couple questions.
Go ahead.
I think this is great. I think this has to be done. I mean, it's a lot of money. I think for anyone to have to throw down before they put a shovel on the ground and want to add it. I think this is a lot of money for anyone to start a building. Mm-hmm. I think it's great for the city to have these funds, but I still think, it's just my personal opinion, it just seems like a huge chunk of money that's not even, before you even start building. But I think this is great that you've broken it down. We're breaking it down into different sizes. And one question, is there a difference or between like if you're the owner of the property and doing it yourself versus a developer, or if you're doing it as a rental property or an income?
No, it's a land entitled right, and so you really can't make those sort of distinctions, even though cities can incentivize certain kinds of design and construction, and maybe that includes making certain fees. But as far as establishing a standard, it goes with the land and the owner. The city's got to be sort of blind.
So the law requires us to be blind to
who owns it.
Yeah.
So the only thing I did hear from you that, and I want at least the commission to consider this question, are these higher than they need to be, given that the purpose of impact fees is to offset through some formulary the cost likely to be incurred by the city?
Right.
So if the intent of the law, the intent of the legislature with this law was to encourage affordable housing, if we encumber the cost with fees that actually result in fewer of them being built, which would be the real issue here.
And that's my thing. I think there's certain people that are like, I can never do this because I don't have 20 grand to give to the city.
Well, they don't have 20 grand. Well, it's 11, it's 10, it's 8.
I would argue that the impact's less as one of these because the infrastructure is already there. You know, they're not having to put in new
So thus is the reason why the legislature required the proportional ratio. Right. So yes, I mean, you're making the legislature's argument because they agree with you by requiring this. But I will argue vociferously that our fees are about the low as you can get them.
Okay.
I mean, in the Bay Area, impact fees aren't 18, no. They're 50.
Yeah.
In adjacent cities, they're 36, 42. So we've kept them as low as we could possibly get them, even to the point of possibly being artificially low, but understanding that if you don't collect it in a new home, the taxpayer pays it in taxes. That's the requirement of the law. So the question is, do you as taxpayers think you should be sponsoring other people's development because that's what you would be doing, or should they carry the weight of their own development? And that's you. There's a fee study on the website. It's ridiculously large, but it justifies all of this at the level that we've adopted it. And I would just tell you, I hear you. I don't have $18,000 to plunk down, but I'll tell you, 18 is the cheapest around.
I just think as if it's a homeowner, you know, it's a different game than a developer. Like,
that
you're
going to use it for
a rental. You are, right. The one thing I would still say is you said we've had 9 permits, all approved, and we've had, and even under this plan, nobody would be required to pay, and none of these were required to pay.
Correct.
Anything other than a building permit and inspection fees and whatever's related directly to code compliance. Correct. So my instincts say that whether we set it at 8 or 7 or 10 or 9 or 11 or 8, the impacts in the real world are going to be negligible for either somebody who wanted to do it because there won't be many, or the city making money off it because there won't be any money there. I think it's still going to be largely these 750s and smaller. And that's really probably where most affordability is going to fall in our area,
Yeah.
And again, I heard what you said, because we just talked to a man who's leaving the Bay, leaving San Francisco, because the fee structures are so high. He can't afford to do business there and stay even in the same location. He has to move his equipment around periodically just to try to negotiate a better deal, which also sounded like a smaller space each time. So here he's feeling pretty good about having some space and some opportunity. So I hear you, though. I definitely.
I think this is great. Obviously it's law, and I think it's fantastic. I still. When we're trying to encourage people to add on or build or, you know, and create more housing, I feel like this is a lot. It could be a roadblock to preventing people from wanting to.
So if you were to look at a 900 square foot, for example, under the proposal here, 8,600, the 8,600 for a multifamily, for example, somebody build a little duplex or something. In fact, maybe it'd be better to use the single family just because that's maybe more like it. But I look at $9,900, that's about $10 a square foot, correct?
Right.
So they're gonna add $10 or $11 a square foot to their construction cost at $9,960. Mm-hmm. Would that keep somebody from building it? I can tell you current building costs are closer to two and more. If you're, now the average guy, gal may be able to throw in some sweat equity into that and build some of that themselves and get it down. And, but even materials costs are running up. Square. So or more. So I don't know that the 9 or 10,000 there, if somebody were going to be able to build one that big in their backyard because they had a big lot, would probably keep them from building it here.
I would tell you I firmly believe that that's true.
Yeah.
But what it would do if we didn't charge it, because they would let us charge nothing, but we wouldn't have money for water and sewer,
right,
and public safety,
right,
and etc. What square footage is one of your 2 bedrooms?
Mm-hmm.
Where?
West Haven, one of your 2 bedroom duplexes.
So in the village, the 2 bedrooms are like 1115 to 1147 square feet. I think we modified one recently and got it up to 1180 or something. Mm-hmm. So that's a 2 bedroom, 2 bath plus a garage.
Mm-hmm.
So
if somebody is to move into town and build one of those in their backyard,
they could
rent it out.
Yep.
There is definitely going to be some impact that is going to be
necessary. Yeah, because you could put a couple of folks in there easily, especially if it's in an unrestricted. We tend to have a lot of homes that are much larger, even with still one person, because these are widows and widowers that have moved in there, and they rented a 3 bedroom, not because they needed it, but because we didn't have a 2 bedroom. And they rented 2 bedroom because we didn't have any 1 bedroom.
And you're...
So I think they would look for these smaller ADUs.
Yeah, you could have a family of 4 living in a 1,000 square foot house with no problem.
For sure.
The impact, So
you could.
I think these numbers are extremely fair compared to what it would cost them to build that as a
huge reduction.
Yeah, so. Well, and I tell you what, this is mostly about, if I'm understanding, Otherwise, you would have to do this calculus the very first time somebody applied, and the next time they applied for a different size, you'd have to do it again,
yep.
And you'd have to justify and rationalize it. This puts it in place so when they walk in the door and say, I want to build something in my backyard, and when you tell them what it costs, they said, oh, I was going to do 800 square feet, but guess what? I'm going to stick with 750.
Mm-hmm.
That's what.
So I will tell you, we see a lot of them at 749 and a half.
Of course, we don't have a lot of them. Yes. Yeah. So it's a two-car garage, even an oversized two-car garage. Even a three-car garage is not going to be so.
No, that's right.
So I think you're going to have people that would do that calculus and say, you know what, I'm going to make something that's really functional, but it's going to be about 749 square feet. Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yep.
And if they really wanted something bigger, then I don't think the 8,000 or 10,000 is going to make the difference. If there's a reason, because they're moving their in-laws back there, that they want a bigger dwelling. And they don't want them in their spare bedroom.
The in-laws made enough money when they sold their house. Right.
They could pay the effects. That's not on the floor, but of course it is. So, ladies and gentlemen, what we're being asked to do is make a recommendation. I believe it's really what you see up here on the screen.
I'll make a recommendation for approval to the City Council of the amendment to the development impact fee as contained herein through the adoption of Planning Commission resolution number 2022, next number. Staff also recommends that the Planning Commission recommends for approval to the City Council the notice of exemption prepared for the proposed action. Is that did I read
it right? It's 15061B3, but you did it right.
Yeah, yes, thank you. Fine. Yes. The way you did it. So we have a motion. Is there a second? So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. Well done. And I said to Scott, you know, there's a lot of words on there. So a really simple concept, but I understand why we have to do it that way. So we're going to go to the staff report. We're going to get a department activity report. Scott, you want to give us some updates?
I apologize in advance. This one might be a little bit longer than usual, and that's saying something. So the West Side annexation was approved by LAFCO. So at this point in time, the action has been approved. Now, under the law, there's this thing called a protest hearing. So the LAFCO has to wait until their next meeting, which was scheduled in November but canceled, so it'll be December 5th, to hold the protest hearing. Then you get 30 days after the protest hearing, it becomes effective. So all of that's fancy way of saying, by and large, they approved it. Don't think there's gonna be an issue, just not completely done yet. The Kramer annexation was supposed to be heard in November, they canceled their meeting, so now he's theoretically going to be in December. I don't know what to say other than, you know, I'll tell you more after it happens in December. We have received an application for a general plan amendment and a rezone for a multifamily project south of Pembroke, which is also, for those who haven't been around a long time, down Pabst, which Pabst is also known as County Road M. So it's down just opposite across the road to the west from the old Baldwin-Minkler facility. So it's, I think there's like emus maybe out there. There are emus?
Right,
I think
there
are goats and emus or something. Well, it depends. We're not quite there yet.
Does this really want to do a trailer park at one time?
Oh, way, like 40 years ago, yes.
Is this on the corner?
No, Pembroke is on the corner.
Okay.
This Pembroke would be is south.
A subdivision that's not been built.
And we're going to go there in a second. Here. Yeah, it's coming back, and I'm going to tell you about that in just next. But just south of the corner of Pabst and South would be Pembroke. And then south of that would be this proposal. So
also on M.
Is that
Dr. It's literally would access on M. M north of where Forbes would be.
Mm-hmm.
Forbes Extended. So I think it's just a big pasture. I think there may be a trailer out there, if I'm not mistaken.
Would it result in the extension of Forbes?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good thing.
That's a great
thing. Because that's part of our circulation.
That's plan. A great
Forbes thing. Forbes actually supposed to go both ways.
You bet.
Subsidized market rate?
So as of today, market rate.
We could use some market rate.
That's as of today, it's a market rate.
And how many units again?
I almost don't know. We'll just call it in above 100.
Wow.
Below 200. We're still working on the details. It just literally, he just applied. So we're working on massaging the site plan. With all due respect, they gave us a very optimistic, they're requesting a lot of optimism, and we don't have as much optimism as they have. So we'll come to some resolution.
How big is the parcel? I mean, it's a site. Do we know?
Oh, we totally know. We can find out here in just a second.
That's fine. You don't have
a I
5?
7.3, I think.
Okay, 7 plus.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. So it's a pretty decent size.
How big is the pen?
Small. It's 2.9 or something like
this
that.
Is significantly larger.
Oh, significantly larger.
But it's right behind it.
So right behind it.
Yeah. This isn't Pacific Home.
Nope.
This isn't a subsidy.
That was a local builder.
It's a local interest developer.
Yeah. Okay, good. So Pembroke, just to the north of that. We've gone through Pembroke. I mean, Pembroke was originally approved, I think, in 2006. So it's been around a long time.
Between 6 and 8, for sure.
That's exactly right. And it's been in multiple iterations. So I call this iteration Pembroke 3.0. And they are requesting more density because supply costs have gone up, labor costs have gone up. They just can't. It was actually less than that. It was 17. Then it went to 24, but there was an existing house out there. It's the house that's there now. And then now they want, do my math. Now they want 31. Now the
Scaliger.
It is. The density, this is kind of the core. They found the quirk in the program here. The lot size to get that reduces below 6,000. Our minimum lot size in Orland is 6,000 square feet. Excuse me, to get 31 lots, which is what they think they need to make it market viable, they need 5,800 square foot lots. The only way to get below the 6,000 square foot lot size minimum is to go with a plan development designation.
Correct.
But it's under 5 acres, so theoretically it's not supposed to have the plan development designation. So we're caught in this snafu. So we're probably going to recommend breaking our own rules and doing a plan development on that site, with a plan development, general plan designation, an R3, an R2 zoning designation, but a tentative map that shows single family detached houses. So I say this in advance, that we're gonna break some rules here, all of which I'll tell anybody listening, we've talked to the attorney about this, so we're feel good about what we're doing. We're not doing anything illegal, but we're trying to make it work for them. But because of the escalating costs of supplies and
they need to make the houses affordable.
They need to try to make the houses.
And that's how they're going to do it.
Right.
Well, that's hindsight.
So anyway, we're working with them on Pembroke 3.0, and it'll probably pop up to you relatively soon. We have 2 conditional use permits for agendizing in December. So I know we always have the discussion, do we have a December meeting or not? We're going to need to have a December meeting because we have 2 applicants right now that are waiting on conditional use permits. So we will need to have a meeting on the 15th of December. So if you're not going to make it, please let us know, but we will have a meeting on the 15th. And then I guess in bummer news of the day, D.R. Horton was building Linwood and Orland Park phase 1. Well, everybody is very afraid of what's going to happen to the economy in 2023, and they have pulled out of that project. So that project has reverted back to its owner, Dino Visinoni or Visinoni Brothers. And they are, going to start again. So all the streets went in, all the utilities went in, we dealt with Caltrans, what else? And then they walked. So the money is hard on Linwood. So they're building that out. They own that. It's D.R. Horton, but phase 1 of Orland Park is not them anymore. So I don't know what's going to happen.
So so where we've got sticks in the air, slabs poured, that's going to get
finished. A done deal.
There's how many? There about 40?
No, I think there's
30?
37, yeah.
Okay, so we got those that'll get done, but then those future expansions, which would have popped us closer to 200 if they were all built,
no,
on hold.
So you'll note if you've driven down 32 lately, there's some big old cement blocks blocking off those.
Yeah,
because those streets aren't dedicated to the public. The public city hasn't accepted them, so that's why they're blocked off. They're private property right now.
I saw that. Sweet.
So unfortunate. The parcel in the front, closest to 32, which would, I'll call it the northernmost mm-hmm. piece, is actually owned by a different entity, mm-hmm. the Howard.
Yep.
Scott Howard and his brother own that. They're still looking. They're still interested. I want to be an optimist and say it's a matter of time.
Highway commercial.
Yes, it's actually dual zoned. It's the only piece in Orland. This was before my time. R1 and C2. It's got this weird candy stripe looking thing on the viewer.
So they could develop R1 there, or they could develop strip center.
Or they could come and ask us for something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's bizarre. It was. Yeah, I can't take credit for that one.
Well, and house or two were actually removed there. There was existing residences there that they removed.
Yeah.
Burned one down or bulldozed it out or whatever.
Yeah. And then the DWR water project, thanks to our city clerk and folks at City Hall, is chugging right along. I mean, we meet every
Pete's
Tuesday.
Pete's always on TV all the time.
So we're cranking away. Cameras. You probably saw the public works folks that are out there doing phase one of it, trying to get some people right on some of the businesses on the south side of 32. I think we're going to maybe talk about going to bid to really ramp some speed up on this sucker here soon, but it's still rolling. Plans are looking good. I think are we out to bid on phase?
I think we're like 90.
Yeah, I think we're like days from getting out the bid on phase 2A. And then the last thing I just wanted to make mention of is that we had this little thing called an election, and the vote's still not official. But we have two potentially new city council members that are in the lead. And I know you all are probably more aware of it than I am, but I just wanted to make sure we noted that. So
I know one of the commissioners knows one of them pretty well.
Yeah, we know somebody who knows one pretty well. The other reason I wanted to mention is because one of the outgoing council, what appears to be an outgoing city council member, was our liaison to the city council. So we'll be getting likely a new person in that role in January. So that's all I got for you tonight.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the report. Some positive news there. I'm very pleased to hear about some affordable housing in form of an apartment complex, especially one of the scale. I think if they've got the wherewithal to make it happen, well, I think there's demand. And then to hear that the Pembroke property, maybe finally we could move ahead with that, that would be wonderful. So commissioners, do you have anything to report tonight?
Just driving through town, it's been great to see some of the apartments going up, getting stucco mm-hmm. on them. The new Farwood addition
mm-hmm.
getting much, much closer. The two new apartment complexes, they got dirt finally moving on mm-hmm. The Liberty Complex.
La Montaña.
Right,
that's it. No, but I like the name.
That's the name.
Liberty Bell and.
No, I'm talking about the new rest, the new store.
That's Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yes.
I think I don't know. Don't somebody Spanish. You better.
Somebody can just about reach from the back of one of those Habitat houses right into the back wall.
It'd be convenient.
Close place to shop, so there you go.
Yeah, no, it's good to drive around and see things going. It's not a shocker about what happened out at the Horton Project. It's disappointing. We you called it. You suspected that what the market and the economy was doing, that they were just about a year too soon. Or too late, a year too soon, I think they'd all been built. So, and what we're seeing now is we're seeing investment groups buy new homes and immediately put them into property management. And so that's happening in Chico right now. With the development over there. It means houses that were built for families to buy are now becoming houses for people to rent brand new. So it has an impact. Different on a community overall, especially if there's significant numbers of those, and how maybe a neighborhood develops. Or, there's a difference in pride of ownership, whether it's your lawn, the landlord's lawn, or it's lack of a lawn.
Mm-hmm.
oftentimes, you know, just the general. It doesn't automatically mean renters are bad people. It's a lot of that in their concern now on the landlord manages, but it is different. We'll have to see what happens with these 37 homes.
And I would, your comment about lawns has tipped off my brain, which is a scary thing, but the building code is going to be readopted here. We're going to go to the council maybe the next meeting. It's a three-year update. Every 3 years, code gets updated. This update has very minimal big-time changes. It just basically, last time around, we talked about being solar ready, and then it went to being solar required. Now we're going to be electric ready, and that is, it talks
all
about
electric.
Yeah, we need to be much more in tune with going electric than going natural gas. One of the things that the state did do, and the tipped me off on the grass part, was over 23, 24, and 25, they are reducing the desired amount of water per household, such that by 2026, standards are pretty tight. They're pretty tough. So new homes are just going to increase in their efficiency standards. Low water use everything is going to go to very low water use everything. And it's about half. The standard in 2026 will be about half of what the ordinance standard is today.
We see a lot less sod.
So turf is probably going away.
Sod will be the exception, or it'll be in your backyard.
It would be
we can tell
it. Out of sight.
Yeah.
you're going to see a lot of low water. So others that might have anything to report? I can tell you that's exactly what we're looking at. We're looking at building more at the village. We've already told our engineer there's no natural gas. These are all electric, start to finish. So, if you've ever dealt with PG&E on getting natural gas installed, it's not the worst thing that could ever happen to somebody who's developing. It's a lot easier to run electric water lines. Well, that's why in 3 years you're going to have to be battery backup. Right? That's where we're going. You're going to have batteries.
Eventually, you will have batteries.
You'll have batteries. You'll have on-site storage, and you'll probably have to share it. And you'll probably have to share it with the grid someday. You got it. Share it with the grid. All right. So I don't have anything else to report. So other than everybody watch and make sure that the 15th of December works, since we've got some of the business to do. And that brings us to where we thought we'd be. And just a couple minutes over. We were discussing how long a meeting would go. I said hour 21.
Oh.
So
super close. Super close.
So with that, we're going to move to adjourn.
Upper corner.
Yeah. Hi, your husband.